Penguin Random House Audio presents The Little Sister by Raymond Chandler. Read for you by Scott Brick. Chapter 1. The pebbled glass door panel is lettered in flaked black paint. Philip Marlowe, Investigations. It is a reasonably shabby door at the end of a reasonably shabby corridor, in the sort of building that was new about the year the all-tile bathroom became the basis of civilization. The door is locked, but next to it is another door with the same legend, which is not locked. Come on in. There's nobody in here but me and a big bluebottle fly. But not if you're from Manhattan, Kansas. It was one of those clear, bright summer mornings we get in the early spring in California before the high fog sets in. The rains are over. The hills are still green, and in the valley across the Hollywood Hills, you can see snow on the high mountains. The fur stores are advertising their annual sales. The call houses that specialize in 16-year-old virgins are doing a land office business. And in Beverly Hills, the jacaranda trees are beginning to bloom. I had been stalking the blue bottle fly for 5 minutes, waiting for him to sit down. He didn't want to sit down. He just wanted to do wingovers and sing the prologue to Pagliacci. I had the fly swatter poised in midair, and I was all set. There was a patch of bright sunlight on the corner of the desk, and I knew that sooner or later, that was where he was going to light. But when he did, I didn't even see him at first. The buzzing stopped, and there he was. And then the phone rang. I reached for it inch by inch with a slow and patient left hand. I lifted the phone slowly and spoke into it softly. "Hold the line a moment, please." I laid the phone down gently on the brown blotter. He was still there, shining and blue-green and full of sin. I took a deep breath and swung. What was left of him sailed halfway across the room and dropped to the carpet. I went over and picked him up by his good wing and dropped him into the wastebasket. "Thanks for waiting," I said into the phone.
"Is this Mr. Marlowe, the detective?"
It was a small, rather hurried, little girlish voice. I said it was Mr. Marlowe, the detective.
"How much do you charge for your services, Mr. Marlowe?"
"What was it you wanted done?" The voice sharpened a little.
"I can't very well tell you that over the phone. It's very confidential. Before I'd waste time coming to your office, I'd have to have some idea.
$40 a day and expenses. Unless it's the kind of job that can be done for a flat fee."
"That's far too much," the little voice said. "Why, it might cost hundreds of dollars, and I only get a small salary and..."
"Where are you now?"
"Why, I'm in a drugstore. It's right next to the building where your office is."
"You could have saved a nickel. The elevator's free."
I beg your pardon?"
I said it all over again. "Come on up and let's have a look at you," I added. "If you're in my kind of trouble, I can give you a pretty good idea."
"I have to know something about you," the small voice said very firmly. "This is a very delicate matter, very personal. I couldn't talk to just anybody."
"If it's that delicate," I said, "maybe you need a lady detective."
"Goodness, I didn't know there were any."
Pause.
"But I don't think a lady detective would do at all. You see, Orin was living in a very tough neighborhood, Mr. Marlowe. At least I thought it was tough. The manager of the rooming house is a most unpleasant person. He smelt of liquor. Do you drink, Mr. Marlowe?"
"Well, now that you mention it, I don't think I'd care to employ a detective that uses liquor in any form. I don't even approve of tobacco." "Would it be all right if I peeled an orange?" I caught the sharp intake of breath at the far end of the line.
"You might at least talk like a gentleman," she said. Better try the university club, I told her. I heard they had a couple left over there, but I'm not sure they'll let you handle them. I hung up. It was a step in the right direction, but it didn't go far enough. I ought to have locked the door and hid under the desk. Chapter 2. 5 minutes later, the buzzer sounded on the outer door of the half office I use for a reception room. I heard the door close again. Then I didn't hear anything more. The door between me and there was half open. I listened and decided somebody had just looked in at the wrong office and left without entering. Then there was a small knocking on wood. Then the kind of cough you use for the same purpose. I got my feet off the desk, stood up, and looked out. There she was. She didn't have to open her mouth for me to know who she was, and nobody ever looked less like Lady Macbeth. She was a small, neat, rather prissy-looking girl with primly smooth brown hair and rimless glasses. She was wearing a brown tailor-made, and from a strap over her shoulder hung one of those awkward-looking square bags that make you think of a Sister of Mercy taking first aid to the wounded. On the smooth brown hair was a hat that had been taken from its mother too young. She had no makeup, no lipstick, and no jewelry. The rimless glasses gave her that librarian's look.
"That's no way to talk to people over the telephone," she said sharply. "You ought to be ashamed of yourself."
"I'm just too proud to show it," I said. "Come on in." I held the door for her. Then I held the chair for her. She sat down on about 2 inches of the edge.
"If I talked like that to one of Dr. Zugsmith's patients," she said, "I'd lose my position. He's most particular how I speak to the patients, even the difficult ones."
"How is the old boy? I haven't seen him since that time I fell off the garage roof." She looked surprised and quite serious.
"Why, surely you can't know Dr. Zugsmith."
The tip of a rather anemic tongue came out between her lips and searched furtively for nothing. "I know a Dr. George Zugsmith," I said, "in Santa Rosa."
"Oh, no. This is Dr. Alfred Zugsmith, in Manhattan. Manhattan, Kansas, you know, not Manhattan, New York."
"Must be a different Dr. Zugsmith," I said. "And your name?"
"I'm not sure I'd care to tell you."
"Just window shopping, huh?"
"I suppose you could call it that. If I have to tell my family affairs to a total stranger, I at least have the right to decide whether he's the kind of person I could trust."
"Anybody ever tell you you're a cute little trick?" The eyes behind the rimless cheaters flashed.
"I should hope not."
I reached for a pipe and started to fill it. "Hope isn't exactly the word," I said. "Get rid of that hat and get yourself a pair of those slinky glasses with colored rims. You know, the ones that are all cockeyed and oriental."
"Dr. Zugsmith wouldn't permit anything like that," she said quickly.
Then,
"Do you really think so?"
she asked, and blushed ever so slightly. I put a match to the pipe and puffed smoke across the desk. She winced back. "If you hire me," I said, "I'm the guy you hire. Me, just as I am. If you think you're going to find any lay readers in this business, you're crazy. I hung up on you, but you came up here all the same, so you need help. What's your name and trouble?" She just stared at me. "Look," I said, "you come from Manhattan, Kansas. The last time I memorized the World Almanac, that was a little town not far from Topeka, population around 12,000. You work for Dr. Alfred Zugsmith, and you're looking for somebody named Orin. Manhattan is a small town. It has to be. Only half a dozen places in Kansas or anything else. I already have enough information about you to find out your whole family history."
"But why should you want to?" she asked, troubled.
"Me?" I said. "I don't want to. I'm fed up with people telling me histories. I'm just sitting here because I don't have any place to go. I don't want to work. I don't want anything."
"You talk too much."
"Yes," I said. "I talk too much. Lonely men always talk too much. Either that or they don't talk at all." Shall we get down to...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?